Chris's editor of Hawke's Bay
Where
today.
Am I yet?
I think you won some awards recently, you guys, did you not? You may as well have a skite about that, if not your singing.
I'll skite a little bit. Yeah, so we won at the INMA International Media Association's Global Media Awards in London on Friday. We were awarded Best Use of Print across regional titles for our Cyclone Gabrielle special free edition that we put out in the wake of the cyclone. So that was a neat honour for us. It kind of recognises the work of the team. We're all during Cyclone Gabrielle faced with massive challenges in terms of distribution, in terms of reporting, in terms of just getting any news out to anyone in a region that was struggling with power and internet woes. But we produced 20,000 free copies, a 16-page edition, and distributed it through Napier and around a lot of the cyclone hit areas with help from civil defence and helicopters there. So,
Absolutely epic. It occurs to me, Chris, also, with all this talk about the media and, you know, some people's views of, you know, get what you deserve and whatever, we won't miss you. Reporting of disasters is one of the times where the actual journalist, professionally trained one operating by disciplines and answerable for what they print or say, really comes up against human nature of the times, because I recall, even from a distance reporting on that, things that people genuinely will share. People who are cut off from each other, people who are going through a disaster, they've heard this from a neighbour or they've seen this on their Facebook page. The importance of going through and checking what people are hearing and what people are sharing. There were quite extreme stories being shared. That weren't actually happening, that weren't true, that needed to be checked out. It's one of, if not the most important roles for our business.
I think also, I mean, I'm aware of, the excellent efforts of Radio New Zealand through the time as well. You know, you guys did brilliantly. But I do believe in a disaster, there's a real importance for a visual element as well. The people that were trapped and had no power, had no way to see the images on TV. And so for a lot of the people who saw that paper, it was the first time they had seen the extent of the flooding. And so that really is the feedback that we received. You know, we were inundated with thank yous. You know, we had no idea that this is what our region looked like, because we couldn't get anywhere, and we couldn't see it. So, you know, I'm really grateful to a lot of people for that help for that edition. You know, we had it printed for free by Webstar and Masterton, and I want to recognise them for their efforts. And just the whole of the NZME team that helped me and helped all of us get that out to people. It's really neat that we've been recognised, but it's not just us that pulled that together. It was a huge team and a huge effort.
Now, a wonderful part of the Bay, and one of the things I love about your region is how diverse it is, north to south, city, rural overlap, te ao Māori, history and presence. It's an incredibly rich district in that sense. And then there's Norsewood, which is a wonderful piece of history in more ways than one, its own history and then the history of a particular business. What's happening with Norseware?
I mean, of course, Norsewood is Tararua District. It's not quite in Hawke's Bay, but
Oh my goodness.
it's certainly
You're
part of
punching.
our it's part of our distribution area and
Yeah.
part of the
So
place,
where
one
do
of the
things
places in Hawke's Bay that I really
cross
love.
with Danny Virk and with Norsewood? Where's the boundary between the bay and Tararua?
It's south of Takapo.
Right.
That central Hawke's Bay becomes Tararua. You kind of, if you know the Takapo Plains, they're just a big flat countryside, and then you sweep down into a little ravine, and you're basically at the head of the Tararua district, and you're heading into Norsewood 5 minutes later. So, but we care about Norsewood. We love it, and so does Norseware. You know, they for 61 years, they've provided the financial lifeblood of the village for about 150 locals. They pay about $1 million of wages around the town for its factory each year, and they produce Kiwi socks for Norsewood and for New Zealand. And so they've got a new high-profile owner. So that's an interesting change for the town. They've got Tim Dean, who's a former Fonterra managing director, and he's keeping everything as local as it gets. He's making the packaging's now produced by a Napier company. Local engineers, electricians, and tradies are being used. They're just trying to employ locally, and they're an interesting case study of a large brand that hasn't been destroyed by market deregulation, that has stayed in the regions, consistently on the brink of closure, but fighting through it with a brand and a local commitment. And so it's really neat to see that it's being nurtured still, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Where is it at? Is it under new ownership though? And is that future secure?
Yeah, the future seems much more secure than it was. And in 2007, it was sold off, I believe, by the founder, who was a Norwegian soldier, Ola Rehn. He fell in love with New Zealand when he travelled here and decided to start a business and brought it to Norsewood. Because, of course, Scandinavia is obviously a huge part of Norsewood's tradition, Dannevirke as well, just down the road. But yeah, in 2007 it was sold off, and it was bought by kind of a group of investors, including staff. Like, staff invested in it. They bought the knitting machines, they bought the stock, they rented the factory, and they paid a royalty to the brand's owner to keep production going. But it was bumpy times, and so they are, I think, Norsewood in particular, is as a town in general, is just delighted at the new ownership to have Tim Dean, former Fonterra managing director, come in. It's a real boost for the town, and it seems that he wants to keep it there. So it started last year.
Now, staying with business, sort of, the bar, the hotel, and the noise restrictions. Please explain.
It's quite a common thing around New Zealand, right? You have gentrification, and then the old haunts of bars sometimes just can't survive around the complaints. In this case, it's quite an interesting one because the Common Room Bar in Hastings, it's kind of been a fixture of the Hastings redevelopment of the city centre since probably 2013, 10 years or so. And last year there was a hotel that opened a block over, called Quest Hastings. It's Hastings's first, probably city centre hotel, that's right in the city centre. Now, Hastings has always had a noise limit, noise restrictions, 50 decibels from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's been in place since 2015. But the Common Room, just after COVID, decided to build an outdoor stage for a bunch of live music performances that have been hugely successful. Then, of course, Quest moved in, and some of the Quest guests complained about, the drum and bass. The Common Room hosts all sorts of different electronic and, I suppose, you wouldn't just say loud music, but it's not conducive to sleep, put it that way. A lot of the music that it hosts there, and so it had two complaints from Quest guests, and the owner rang the council to just let them know, look, these guests have complained to me, and the council's informed Common Room that, mem don't forget your 50 decibel limit. And the owners kind of looked at that and said, well, 50 decibels is quiet talking. There's no way I can make that outdoor stage into a quiet talking venue. And so I just have to shut it. I can't, I don't want to fight with the council. And so basically, two complaints from a a couple of tourists nearby have shuttered or forced the closure of a popular outdoor socializing area and a popular bar's stage. So it's a really tricky one, right? Like you feel for everyone. And you know, to his credit, Scott Bellingham, who's the owner of Quest, he's devastated by the fact that the complaint has effectively closed the outdoor bar. He wants to bring it back. He wants to work with Common Room to, you know, house his guests on the other side of the hotel on a day when there is loud music. But that 50 decibel limit's not going away. And so if anyone else were to complain, it will be challenging for bar owner Gerard Barron. So yeah, tricky
It's
one.
true, Chris. It's up and down the country, really. And also, as you have gentrification, but also just this focus on having more compact cities, and more apartments, more city living, less sprawl. Unfortunately, the same issues arise. I know it's a big deal in Dunedin with a lot of those famous bars that have hosted many famous bands. Thanks, as always, Chris Hine is editor of Hawke's Bay Today.